I was in institutions and boarding schools and labeled emotionally disturbed. But everywhere I went, the school would say, he doesn't belong here. You can't keep this kid here. I had a childhood of rejection and of guilt and of shame.
What changed?
You know, Jesus found me.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today we're with Michael. He is a son first and a father to four children. He is an entrepreneur and a motivational speaker who helps men and women discover their identity and purpose in life. I hope you enjoy this conversation. And to get us started, Michael, can you just tell us a little bit about your upbringing?
Sure. Thanks, Tim. Yeah, it's great to be here with you, man. I love what you're doing. I love your mission. And I think we're very aligned in that. And, I was born and raised Jewish. I had a pretty tough childhood, actually. I was not in my home for most of my life and started with my mother passing away when I was three. My father was in my life. He was present, but not present. And he was a very practical man. And he loved us the way that he knew how. But it wasn't what we needed. And my brother was a year and a half old when my mom passed. She was 29 at the time. And so it was a difficult time for us. We were being raised by a nanny that was Spanish. And my dad was working and my mom had kind of set him free, you know, go find a mommy for my boys when I go. She was passing very slowly from a brain tumor. And so he did that. And my dad, as a practical man, went out and found a mommy for his boys. But that entailed him being at work during the day and dating at night often. And we were kind of
to your own devices
at home. What's that?
Left to your own devices.
We were too young for that, but our nanny didn't speak much English. And so we just never got the real nurturing and the things that we needed. And then, you know, here a new person comes into our life. And for me, I wasn't having it. I rejected it. I couldn't communicate, as most children can't. Their communication comes out through behavior because they can't communicate what they're trying to, you know, convey. And so my behavior started to kind of head downhill a little bit and things got worse and worse. And the next thing you knew, I was out of the house and I was in institutions and boarding schools and labeled emotionally disturbed and all of these things. But everywhere I went, the school would say things like, he doesn't belong here. You can't keep this kid here. You need to transition him back into the home and things like that. And so it was difficult because that wasn't happening. I was consistently just being put into the next place. So it was tough. It was a tough upbringing.
What kind of?
And so then I moved to Florida.
Can you give us an example of what that was like in your childhood? Give us a story of some of the things that you were up to that created that kind of environment.
I was pretty combative, as far as at home. I was asking a lot of questions about my biological mom, and my dad decided we would just put that away for now and focus on our new mom, new mommy. And that was really difficult for me and angered me. And as I started to push back, my stepmother's own, childhood trauma started to come out. And so then she started to become kind of verbally abusive. And then that turned into physically abusive. And then nobody believed me. And then I really felt alone. So I had a childhood of rejection and of guilt and of shame. And, you know, how can I behave this way? How can I upset the family? All these things. And in these schools, I felt, like they threw away the key. They just locked me up and threw away the key. And it was difficult. Now, later, my story changed dramatically because I realized really kind of what the truth was and all of that and who I was and why I was who I was. But gosh, at the time, I just felt like I had to figure things out on my own. And so that's what I did.
You grew up mostly without clear direction on what it means to be a man, what it means to be a husband or a father. What changed?
Jesus found me. I was married at 30 to a woman that converted to Judaism. And I think she did that to please my parents, but it wouldn't have worked. So, you know, a couple of years into the marriage, she realized I didn't really go to synagogue much. And that was pretty typical of most of the Jews I knew. You know, maybe Friday nights if they were devout, but then, you know, high holidays and that's about it. And I just, you know, hadn't experienced much of God. I didn't really know much of God. I wasn't really interested in church because I didn't know much about Judaism, but I knew I wasn't a church guy. And I rejected it for a long time. And finally, she broke me down. And honestly, it's interesting how God makes bad things good. I've kind of was manipulated into it, but I went. And I went to a church here in Florida, and the pastor was amazing. But also, John Maxwell spoke about every other week here, and he was teaching. And so here's this amazing music, which I really appreciated. And John Maxwell and this other guy, Tom Mullins, called him Coach. Oh my gosh, what an amazing orator overall. And it was my first introduction to actually speakers anyway, in general. And I thought to myself, you know, well, I love the music. This is great. They had a horn section. It was very, like, you know, just raised your spirit. Mm-hmm. And these messages are practical, and I can use this information in my life. This is good stuff. So I'm going to keep coming, but I'm not giving my life to Jesus because I see all these other people in here and they're kind of, you know, believers on Sunday, but the rest of the week, I'm not seeing any evidence of that at all. So I'll just do what they're doing and I'll just be a Sunday believer, you know? But I just wouldn't give myself to Christ. I would not allow it to happen. I was fighting it for a really long time. And eventually I gave in, you know, and surrendered and gave my life to Christ, but it was overshadowed by a very difficult marriage. The baptism was on my ex-wife's birthday. She was really mad about that. Like, I couldn't figure that part out at all. So it overshadowed that day. And it wasn't until I found myself as a single dad crawling into a church when I started to kind of understand the relationship of a father, because everyone was telling me there's this perfect father that loves you and he's amazing. And he's always there for you. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I know all about fathers. They're not there. They don't protect you. They're not They don't listen to you. They've got to do what they've got to do. They're just there. You know, they're there. They take care of you, and that's about it. And that's what I knew.
Mm. Yeah, you applied the only knowledge you had about fathers to God himself.
Absolutely. The filter of this father, my horizontal father, became the filter in my vertical father. And, you know, you and I kind of doing the same thing, encouraging dads. One of the things I tell fathers is, hey, man, you need a filter change. You've got to change your filter, because if you don't change your filter from this father to this father, you're never going to understand who you are as a father. Because when you can understand how much he loves you through your relationship with your own child, it's a game changer. You know, when God helps you realize he loves you hundreds of thousands of times more than you're capable of, and your children more than you're capable of, starts to shift your gears a little bit. You start to look at things with a different set of eyes, right?
Yeah. I remember a few times where I've told my children, God loves you more than I do.
That's hard to grasp, right?
Yeah, it is. It's hard to understand. You know, it's like, what does that mean? You know, what does it mean? Yeah. It means that God always does what's right and good.
And no matter what.
No matter what. And he's never wrong about it, even if we don't understand it.
I know. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's really hard to fathom sometimes, Tim. It's difficult. But once you get it, you've got it. There's no turning back. Nobody could tell me otherwise. It wouldn't matter what they said or did to get me to think otherwise. You know, that's my dad. And when people say things like, well, I don't think that's possible, I'm like, don't you know who my dad is? You know, you haven't met my dad, apparently, because I know what's possible, and it's way beyond anything I can imagine.
You know, I've found that the men I know who have really taken God up as their father, they found something that is just so drastically more powerfully changing in their lives than men who haven't.
Yeah.
And the strangely enough, the men I've found who have done that in a much more maybe complete way have been the ones who have had absent or very difficult fathers, because they don't have a picture. It's like they know that one's bad, and they have to have something else. And the guys who have like okay dads or like pretty decent ones, it's almost harder, I think, sometimes for them to go, my dad was good, but he's not that good. And to really like raise their eyes up and look up instead of down at their own dad.
Yeah.
How do you feel like that was for you when you came to that realization, then you started to look up? What were the things that stuck out to you about what God is like and what he's able to teach you versus what you had learned growing up?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. And I agree with you. I mean, if you look at guys that have been rescued from, you know, drug addictions and things like that, they're some of the most radical sold out believers because they were one way and now they're another. And the impact is so different on their lives. And he literally pulled them out of the pit and made them a man again, mm-hmm. you know? And I think it's very similar. You know, we sing all these songs about, you know, no longer an orphan. Well, that's really what it is. When you don't have a father that is the type of father that you need, the one that can really lift you up and encourage you and guide you, and then you find him, it's almost like you were adopted and you met your long lost father and you always wanted to know who he was, except now he's in your life all of the time and starts to make an impact. And I've got this, you know, complete book that tells me all about his character, and I can always find out who he is and what he's all about, always, which is amazing. And the more I learn, the more I'm excited, and the more I'm excited, the more it comes out of me, you know? And yeah, I think it's so powerful. I literally, in the middle of prayer, and a group of men will say, I'll just start talking to them like, you know, hey, Dad, I've got to figure this out. And the awe and wonder of these other men looking at me going, did you just say, hey, Dad? Like, my son says, yo, Dad, right? So I think I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, I said, hey, Dad, because that is my dad. Mm-hmm. I think that's why King David, you know, was a man after God's own heart. All the mistakes he made, and I made my share too, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But what I've learned is every time I make a mistake, I go to him, not from him. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that made him a man after God's own heart. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's who we're called to be as men.
Mm, to go after God.
Absolutely. And not run from him ashamed when we make a mistake, but go to him for help to not do it again. You know, to not fail.
Yeah. That's fantastic. What are some of the qualities that you feel like how you've drawn from God himself that you've brought into your own life as a father?
You know, after I got divorced and I found myself as a single father, I was looking at my son, and it was this amazing moment where the sun was shining through the window. He was playing with his Legos on the floor. I'm sitting on the couch drinking a cup of coffee, and I'm just looking at him, and I'm just so in love with this kid. You know, he's probably 7 years old, something, but I'm a single dad. I'm like, gosh, now what? And I started thinking about who I want him to become as a man. And so I started writing it down. I started writing down, you know, a couple things in my journal that I thought he should become as a man. And it went on for days. I wrote for days. And when I was finally finished, I kind of came back and I read over everything I'd written. And I just started praying. I asked the Lord, how do I help him become that man?
What did you write?
I mean, I wrote, I wanted him to be a man of integrity, a man of character, a man that is not ashamed to share, you know, the good news of the gospel. Is not ashamed to walk up to someone who's limping and pray for them, you know, and pray for their healing, and not afraid of the things of God, and not afraid of men, and not to care what people thought of him, but to, you know, kind of dance to the beat of his own drum and be a leader and stand up for what he believed in and so much more. And honestly, Tim, he has become 10 times that man that I ever prayed for. But when I asked the Lord how to do that, how do I get him here? How do I help him become that man? And it was really simple. what I wrote next was, first, you have to become that man. And that took me a minute. It took me back because I thought I was kind of sort of that man, and I realized I wasn't. And I started to focus on myself first. I put my own oxygen mask on. I started to look at my life. I started to look at areas that needed to be adjusted. And I just laid them down at the altar. I'm like, you know what? Chisel me, prune me, do what you got to do, Lord. Just, Dad, whatever it takes, this is where I want to go. I want to become this man because I want him to follow me and become that man. And that's what I did. And that's who I've become. And it changed me, but it gave him a guide that he needed. Especially boys will follow the guide. Girls, too, need that approval of their father, and they need an example to be set. And whoever you are in your relationship with your daughter, whoever you are in life, that's who she's going to marry, pretty much. So decide who you want her to marry, because you need to be that man. Andy Stanley said it best. He was talking about relationships, and he was talking about a female to a male. And the daughter went to the mother and said, gosh, I met this amazing boy, and he's such a stand-up guy, and he's a Christian boy, and he's just amazing, but Mom, he doesn't like me. And she said, honey, you have to become the woman that he's looking, the woman the man you're looking for is looking for. And I took that upon myself. I said, I'm going to become the man that the woman I'm looking for is looking for. And in that journey, I became a man that my son could follow and emulate, and more is caught than is taught, right?
It is. I was going to say, that's what came to my mind. It's caught, not caught. That's right.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I want my ceiling to be his floor. So how high can I raise my ceiling?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a limit. I mean, a tree doesn't stop growing because it, you know, decides that's enough. So I'm just going to grow as much as I can. My prayer is he starts where I left off.
Yeah. No, that's right. I've always hoped that when my kids get to parent age, they say, I want to be a better dad than my dad. I hope we all say that. Even if our dads are great.
It's true. I told my son, I said, you know what, bud? You know, boys tend to buck up a little bit here and there and at different ages. And I said, you know what, dude? I said, I am the only man in your life that wants you to do better than him. You're in competition with the rest of the world, but you're not in competition with me. I'm trying to lift you up on my shoulders like I did when you were a little boy and keep you there. Need to pay attention because that's my goal.
Oh, that's good.
That was impactful.
Yeah, I know. That's really good. So how old are your kids now? Some are older?
Yeah, I had three stepchildren. So they're, when I married my son's mom, I've been married one time. She had three kids. So they were 8, 9, and 11 when I got them. They're now in their 30s, all of them. Two of them have children. The two girls have children. And my oldest son does not have any children yet. The girls, unfortunately, are not in my life anymore. After the divorce, I was not in their lives, and that hurt pretty badly. My son is still in my life, but when on his terms. And then it's just been my biological son and I, and he was 15, or my youngest was 15 when he was born. So he was almost an only child.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's been, you know, it's an interesting dynamic because...
How old is he now?
18, just turned 18.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's awesome. I mean, he's so much more of a man than I ever could have prayed for, and I can't believe that he's only 18. I can't wait to see where this takes him because he's just incredible. And I know every dad would say that about their son, and that's great. You know, he's still a boy, and 18-year-olds are a trip. They're still knuckleheads. They're really funny. You know, some of the stuff he does. But at the same time, I see his heart. I see his drive. I see his desire to do good and to be good and to really, really understand what it means to surrender. And he asks the most deep, difficult questions of me about the Lord, which is fantastic because I know he's really thinking about it. And he's not pretending that he understands it. To me, that's really important. I've taught him for a long time. Don't tell me you know if you don't, because you know boys are like, yeah, I know.
Yes.
No, you don't. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah. So, but the hardest thing about a dad is, I was at an event this weekend. I told you about it earlier. And I was with a group of dads. I was with four amazing guys and their boys guiding them through this weekend. And I was explaining to them what it means to start to kind of let them follow their own path, but be there for them. And the way it is there's a big pit in front of them, and you see them walking towards it, and they're probably on their phone. They're not looking, you know, and you say, hey, son, there's a big hole in front of you. And the boy goes, yeah, I know, dad. And you're like, yeah, I know that you know, but there's a big hole in front of you. Whatever, dad, get off my back. Boom, they're in the hole. Okay. And so I walk up to the edge of the hole. I look down in the hole and I'm like, okay, are you okay? Everything good? And he goes, yeah, dad, will you help me get out? And I say, no, I can't pull you out, but I could teach you how to get out of that hole, because I need to know that you can get out of the hole when I'm not here. I'm going to be with you for the rest of my life, but not for the rest of yours. So you need to have access to my father, and you need to know how to get yourself out of pits. So let me teach you how to get out of the pit. Hardest thing to do in the world, because you just want to throw them a rope and pull them out and hug them and take care of them, but you can't, because as they start to grow as young men, they need adversity. You know, we became the characters that we were and got character integrity through the adversity we went through, but then we don't want our kids to have to go through anything. The very thing that got us where we are, we're trying to avoid for them, right? Naturally, we're trying to do the right thing, but we have to let them fall down. And we have to let them fall down in the knowledge that we're there to pick them up or help them get up, right? And I think that happens at about 13. I think that's a great time to start doing that. Some boys are ready at 12.
That's really good. That's a great analogy to picture how a father can treat his growing son. So I think that is difficult. And there's probably often some conflict that arises between mother and father on this particular issue.
Yeah, they can't do that. They're freaking out. They want to, you know, they're like, oh my God, save my baby. Like, yeah, hold on, woman, back up. We're doing something. It's hard. It's hard on them. It really is. It's difficult. And in a divorce situation, it's even harder because the communication's not always fantastic. And you may have some differences in opinion. I learned a long time ago that there's nothing I can do to change what happens when he's at his mom's. I don't know if she learned that. I hope she did. But I stopped trying to control his life when he was there. I just wanted to make sure that I instilled the right things in him when he got home. But sometimes I had to unteach him some things before I could teach him.
Yeah, that is hard. It's hard when parents aren't on the same page.
It's meant to be too. There's a reason for that. You know, no boy wants his dad when he's sick in bed.
Right.
No man.
Yeah, no. Right.
We want to be babied. Yeah, like we want to be babied. Like, take care of me, honey. Take care of me. I'm dying.
Before we get into some more practical kind of hands-on things, if you could go back and change one thing about how your fatherhood journey went, what would that be?
Yeah, I know exactly what it is. You know, I've had Crohn's. I'm doing really well now. I've used natural healing to get healthy. But I dealt with Crohn's for many years, and I was in a lot of physical pain most of my son's childhood, unfortunately. I managed. I pushed through all of it. There were many days that I was at a number 11 and we were out doing something fun because I just would not let it take days for me. But man, at the end of the day, I had a super short fuse because the pain ate up probably 85% of my bandwidth. I'm not using it as an excuse. I didn't learn to manage that well. And so I usually would warn him, hey, quit pushing, quit pushing, quit pushing. But then I would blow. And I would yell and I would scream. And I made so many mistakes with him on that level that I still regret to this day. And there's oftentimes I'll sit and think about how some of those days went. I'm just mortified that I even behaved in that way. And that's the thing I wish I could change. I've been very transparent. I've asked for his forgiveness. He's given it to me. But I can't help but think there's some damage there that needs to be repaired at some point. And I'm trying to help him with that now through, you know, inner healing and prayer and, you know, even therapy if he needs it. But I don't want him to carry that for life. Mm-hmm. And he appears to have overcome it, but you know how we are as guys, we're very good at compartmentalizing things, and we can shut the lid on the box and put it away and it'll surface on its own. But I don't want it to happen in a relationship for him where he starts screaming. So I really, really regret those times. And I wish I could fix that. And I'm trying now, but I'm not that guy anymore. But man, that was.
Yeah, no, that is. I imagine a lot of men can relate to that. Just that anger, that frustration welling up for whatever reason. Sometimes it's stress at work. Sometimes it's, you know, you have an illness that's really wearing on you. Sometimes there's just other things going on. And, you know, I think you're right that even if we've forgiven, sometimes there are still scars there that take a long time to sort of understand. And sometimes this, you don't feel the scars or see them until you're in the same position. And then you realize, they're still there somewhere.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You know, kind of wonder what vows did he make during that time that he's not even aware of. You know what I mean? What vows to himself did he make? And you know, we make them before we're old enough to make those kind of decisions and thoughts, and they become truth, and they're not truth, they're lies, but we take them on as something that is real. Really working hard to help him uncover that. And I'm doing that by finding a lot of books that help me uncover it. And I read a book, you know, that's pretty powerful about that. I just read one by Chad Gonzalez called Fearless. That's amazing. And I immediately bought him a copy. He read it. Now we're going to do a Bible study on it with some friends to go through it at great depth, because I want him to understand the whole thing about fear, because fear and anxiety in our kids today is rampant. Like, all of our kids have anxiety issues. And I think a lot of it has to do with the perversion of the food source and the water and all kinds of things. But, you know, aside from the external things, the amount of information that comes at them in a day through their phone is probably 80 to 100x of what came at us as kids. And they're not old enough to manage that. They can't manage the emotion, the discernment, you know, the comparison. They're not built for that, man.
Well,
we got to help them with that.
No, that's right. Well, in many ways, you know, none of us really are. We're not able to be responsible for the entire world and then also responsible for whatever small sphere of influence we might have at the same time. You know, our minds become busied with everything way out there, and we're blinded to everything that's right here in front of us.
Yeah. And we're literally taking thought for tomorrow, which the word says not to do.
Yeah. That's right.
You know?
Yeah. So it sounds like with your son, even at 18, you're pretty intentional in reading a book with him or engaging with him. Can you describe to me how you go about doing that? Like, what do you say? What do you, obviously you have a history of relationship with him, but I imagine there's some things you say like, hey son, we're going to read a book. Or what does that look like? What do you do? How do you start that?
It's not easy. The kids today don't really read. They'd rather watch a movie, but I explained it to him in a way that he understood. And I said, listen, if you watch a movie, it does all the thinking and all the imagining for you. But if you read a book, you'll engage on a 10x deeper level because you don't see the view. You have to imagine the view. You have to think of it yourself. You have to use your imagination, and it burns the information into your memory because you'll create analogies and you'll get revelations in your own mind that make sense. And that's still not enough. And usually I'll try to find a book that relates to something in his life. So for instance, Fearless, at the end of it, at the very end, which is great, he talks about his experience as a high school basketball player. Well, my son is a high school basketball player. So I said, listen, dude, there's some, and I didn't tell him that exactly because he would have probably skipped to the back. But I said, there are some things in here that directly relate to you. And I promise you, if you read it, there will be a benefit, you know, and I just stay on them. Hey, did you read the book today? No, Dad, but I'm on chapter three. I'm like, well, you've been saying that for 2 weeks. You're still on chapter three, huh? And then, you know, then I'll catch up to him and I'll say, hey, have you read it? He goes, I'm on chapter seven. I'm like, okay, keep going. You're doing great. And I encourage him. And then I ask him about it. You know, tell me about it. What did you think? And there's certain times with boys, especially, if you wear them out, first of all, exhausting, or doing a task side by side, that's a great time to get your son to talk. Or if they're in the car and they're fighting, they're kind of trapped. So, you know, I'm like, hey, don't put your AirPods in. I want to talk to you, you know? And, you know, he's so funny because oftentimes when I'm having a stressful day, I'll put background music on that is kind of like, sounds like maybe like something you would listen to when you're getting a massage, you know? But it's like a Christian, like just long drawn out piano notes and things like that, just to calm me down. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh gosh, here we go. A sermon's coming. And I'm like, listen, I'm not putting the music on for effect. It just makes me calm. He's like, I don't know about that, Dad. You know, like, seems like you're about to preach to me. But, you know, we've just, you know, there's, if he wants to do an activity, like he loves to watch movies, we both do. And at night, that's one of his love languages, just sit and watch a movie with me. And I'm like, I will absolutely do that. Let me make dinner and let's go through this book for about 10 minutes and then we'll start the movie. He's not going to fight me on that. Now, if I say, let's take 2 hours or an hour and a half, we're going to read the book, or we're going to read the book instead of a movie, he's not interested. He'll reject it. But I can get 10 minutes before the movie because I'm saying yes and yes with this one little thing in between, if that's cool. Mm. And he's usually cool with it.
That's cool.
So, and that's how I get him involved in the Bible, and we read the word together, and I teach him, and he loves for me to still read to him. You know, he loves to just lay back and let me read the word to him and explain it.
That's neat. So you usually, at this age anyway, you pair it with like a relational activity that he's excited about. And you're like, hey, that's cool. Let's do that. And
yeah,
we're going to do this too. And
yeah,
then not making it too long, like not trying to take over the whole event for this one thing you want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Make it a bite-sized piece.
Yeah. And I refer back to the Bible for a lot of things, you know. You know, when he was younger, not everybody believes in spanking. I do, but only to a certain age.
Yeah, sure.
And I learned a technique to kind of, you know, discipline-wise to calm myself down. And so I would say, okay, go to your room and think about what you did. I'll be up there in a minute and we're going to deal with this. And there's going to be a consequence. So it gave me time to calm down because mm-hmm. I was probably offended and mad that he would do something wrong. Took me a few minutes to calm down. I would go up, and one of the perks was, you know, the anticipation of me coming up made it worse for him, which was great because I wanted him to really understand, you know, action and reaction, right? And that there are consequences for your actions and there are benefits from other actions. So I would go up, I'd say, you understand what's going on and, you know, you shouldn't do this. Yes. Okay. Assume the position. He'd put his hands on the bed. I'd pop him once or twice on the butt. I'd hug it out with him because I knew, you know, I knew he felt hurt. And not everybody agrees with this, and I don't care. This is the way I did it. And I would hug it out. I'd say, okay, calm down. When you're ready, come on down. And when he came down, it was over. Now, the only thing I would do is I would show him in the Bible why I did what I did. Usually, sometimes that would be even before I popped him on the butt. And I would say, look, it says right here, if I spare the rod, I hate you. Well, I'm not going to hit you with a stick. I'm going to pop you on the butt with my hand, but I will discipline you because I love you and I need to discipline you. And it also says here that you're not going to like that, that nobody likes to be disciplined, but that the benefit is amazing, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, he understood it. And when he came downstairs, it was over. I never mentioned it again. I forgot it as far as the East is from the West, because that's what our Father does. And that's it. Price paid, over, lesson learned, done. We go right back to our day. I didn't believe in long-term discipline and taking his stuff. And, you know, that works a little bit. You know, if I catch him at 3 o'clock in the morning on his game system, okay, I'm going to take it out of his room for a couple days. But, you know, generally speaking, that's how I handled things. And he really understood quickly the benefit of obedience and the consequence of disobedience quickly.
That's great. Yeah, it reminds me of the passage, a father disciplines those whom he loves. And I think that's 100% right.
You know, I would show it to him.
If you didn't care, you'd just let him do whatever he wanted.
This is my job, man.
Yeah.
This is what I do.
Yeah, that's great. So when we communicated before this call, you had written something like time spent in what they like to do. Ah, yes, time spent. That is your practical time spent in what they like to do. And so help me understand what that looks like for you. How do you do it? Give me an example of what that looks like. Tell me a little story about something that you've done together that has really powered through that relationship and made it impactful.
Yeah. It can be hard. You know, there was a time, he's always liked video games, but I've always given him an alternative, even if I'm exhausted. If I would come home wiped out from work, he's had school, and he's like, Dad, I want to play video games. I would grab a fishing pole and hold it out and go, you sure? And he'd say, no, let's go. And we'd catch the last little bit of sunshine and go, you know, fishing for a couple hours. And we'd come home and do dinner and bath and go to bed. And, but he was still, you know, he would have his time when he could play. He was into Roblox, and he has this uncanny memory where he could remember the entire play for like an hour and a half. And he loved to describe it to me. Now, I'm not a gamer. So we'd be in the car on a long drive and he'd want to tell me play by play what happened. And it was brutal. It was the worst thing. I hated listening to it. But I had to understand. I had to watch him play so that I knew what questions to ask. And I engaged. Regardless of the fact that I was not interested, I engaged in it because he was interested. And what that did is that opened doors for me to introduce him to new things because he wanted to be interested then in what I was interested in. So we became, you know, fishermen, and I was always a fisherman, but he became a fisherman and we fished together all the time. He got into basketball really heavily and I'm there for him. I'll rebound for him. I'll try to play him, but he just makes me puke now. He's too good. I can't keep up with him until he'll run me till I about die. So he's like, come on, one more game. I'm like, oh, dude, no, Dad's got to go rest for 3 days. But, you know, I'll go rebound for him because I know that it's important. I would drive him to the gym when I was exhausted because I knew that that's what he needed to do. I didn't always stay. Sometimes I needed to go come home and cook dinner and do chores. But I would make sure that I got him in it and I would make sure I engaged in it and I was a part of it. And even if I didn't like it, you know, and what that did was that opened the door for him to share everything with me because he knew that I would find some way to be interested, even if I wasn't, and I would engage with him. And he knew that he had someone he could engage with.
That's really fantastic. I spoke with a gentleman a couple months back, and he described to me a story of when he was 14, and his dad had a track record of asking his children what they wanted for their birthday. And so he had thought for a long time, he's like, I know what I'm going to ask him. So that day came, and his dad said, what do you want for your birthday? And this gentleman told me that he said, Dad, I only want one thing. I want you to take a day off work and I want you to play this video game with me that I love. And his dad looked at him and he said, I'm not going to do that. And it crushed him. 25 years later, he remembers that as a significant event in his upbringing, which is amazing to me that something, and he would even say his dad was a pretty good dad, right? But it's like something like that. You're telling the story of the, and I know you haven't done it perfectly, but the opposite version of that, right? Where you go, I am interested. Because that's what he said. He said that I wanted my dad to understand me and to be interested in me. And I wanted him to be interested in the stuff that I was interested in. And I guess my question to you then is, even though you didn't like some of those things or don't like some of those things, how did you kind of hop that hurdle and go, I'm going to do it anyway? What was the scale?
We're men. We're built for that. You know, intentionality. I made a plan to be there for him on every level. And I made a plan, you know, I took time to write out a plan on how I was going to get him where I wanted him to go. And that was one of the things I committed to. And I made a lot of commitments that were difficult things to hold to. But we're men, we're built for that. That's why we're able to go off to war and protect our country and be gone for, you know, months or back in the day, even years at a time. Because we have a sense of doing the right thing built within us. And that's why the program is called the Fatherhood Code, because I believe that your DNA is coded to be that man, to be able to do those things. It has multiple meanings, but that's really where it came from originally, was I believe it's pre-wired into every man to do those things. Now, we may not be nurturing, because that's not our nature. Some of us have to learn it, though. But what we are wired to do is protect, provide, you know, serve. And if we will grab that and look at what that means to our children, it means a lot of different things. You know, you look at a lot of dads whose daughters paint their whole face up with makeup, you know, and they think it's really cute. Yeah, but will you let them practice when they're 16? Because it's cute when they're 9. What about when they're 16, they're trying to learn what it really looks like and they need to practice? Would you do it then? And most dads would say probably no. But if that's what they need, then that's what you do. I'm not going out like that.
Tell me about this plan. That you said you wrote a plan down. What was in this plan that you wrote?
You know, it all had to do with that journaling day. The reason I started helping dads is because I realized I could reverse engineer how I created a plan to help him become who I wanted him to become. If you have a goal and you don't create an execution plan, then it's just a goal or a dream even, really. The only way for a dream or a goal to become reality is to figure out what the execution and the tactical game points look like. And as men, we're wired to do that really well. It doesn't matter if you learn that or not. I think if you were to sit down and take the time and try to do it, most men can do it. And so I did. I developed kind of a battle plan for who I wanted my son to become, how I was going to get him there. I even thought about, okay, what do the obstacles look like? You know, what are the things that I know are going to come up? And while I'm sitting here sober and alert and quiet, what am I going to do when those things come up, when drugs come up, when alcohol comes up, when girls come up? How am I going to manage those things or help him learn to manage those things? Video games and cell phone. How do I help him learn to self-regulate, right? Because I can't watch him. I can try, but these kids are smarter than us. Remember the whole thing with calculator apps that were something totally different. Mm-hmm. They can do what they want to do. How do you teach them to self-regulate so they don't? You know, a lot of people take the Bible and use it as a tool for guilt. I don't believe in guilt. I don't think that's how God rolls. I don't think when you mess up, you know, your son messes up, you tell him, I told you so. That doesn't help. It puts up a wall. So how am I trained by my father? Hey, son, I have a better path for you. You can do better. I love you. You've repented. You've asked for forgiveness. I forgot it. It's gone. It's over. Can you please try it my way now? And that's how I try to be his dad. You know, sometimes he's got to bang his head up against the wall 3, 4, 5, 6 times before he actually stops and thinks, maybe I ought to try it my dad's way this time and just see what happens.
Let me test it out.
Yeah. What's funny is the epiphany happens oftentimes from somebody else.
Right.
This coach told me to do this. And if I do that, everything will be great. And I'm like, man, I know I've told you that 3,000 times. And I'm like, so is it working? And he goes, yeah. And I've really had to bite my tongue a lot of times and say, I'm so glad you learned. And then later he comes back and he'll say something like, hey, I know you told me that 1,000 times. Like, I see it, Dad. Like, okay.
That's good. Yeah. Hey, thanks so much for all your time. Can you give us 5 minutes on your own program, how people can get in contact with you?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, so I had a program called the Dad Link for a long time. I realized there's a dadlink.org and they're doing great work, and I don't want to step on their toes as I grow. So I decided to change the name to the Fatherhood Code. So the Fatherhood Code is the new program where we'll be, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and LinkedIn as well. And the website right now currently is thedadlink.com, but it will be thefatherhoodcode.com. And you can go on there and go on the wait list for information, but also we'll send you some free tools. We've created some great things for dads that are just useful immediately that you can pick up and learn from. And we're happy to send those to you. And then we're launching a podcast such as this, and I'd love to have you come and join me as well, Tim, because I love what you're doing. And so we're launching a podcast as well. And then we're creating a program for the dads that really want to take it to the next level. So for the Fatherhood Code, we also will have an online community we're building right now, which will be ready in the next few days. And we'll be bringing men in, but we're not going to open it up to just everyone. It's going to be kind of a smaller group to begin with. We'll grow it as we go, but we're not going to let them get really big. We want these groups, and we'll separate them to make sure they're not too big so that men really connect with each other. And then we've created a program for men that really want to take it to the next level called Top Gun Dads. And Top Gun Dads has five courses, another community, and there will be quite a few retreats and things like that under Top Gun Dads. The Fatherhood Code will have retreats as well based on fishing. Top Gun Dads will have retreats that are just very high-end retreats. Not all guys will be able to get to those, and we understand, which is why we created for both. But those will include, you know, rides in a jet, fighter jet, and, you know, weekends with, you know, 12 other men or 11 other men that are, you know, your peers on maybe a higher level in life. So we'll have both programs available. They'll all be available through the Fatherhood Code, and thefatherhoodcode.com will be up and running within days.
Awesome. That's really exciting. Those sound fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Michael, for being with us.
Hey, thank you. I wish you great success, man. I love what you're doing, and we just need to help as many dads become the dad they want to be as we can.
Absolutely.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.